Okay, so welcome to the Planning and Community Development Committee meeting for Monday, May 3rd. And this meeting is not at the city facilities because we are doing remote meetings, and we just had a quick conversation on when we might go back into the city facilities. It's unclear right at this time because of the way the phases are going back and forth. I know it's probably one of those reasons. So welcome to everyone, and we have no visitors that I can see right now. Okay. So the first business agenda item is to extend the emergency rules to allow tents in parking lots and allow temporary signage. So this is nothing new. It's just an extension. Brandon, can you give us just briefly, just refresh our memories on that and tell us why it's being extended?
Yes. So for the record, Brandon Miles, Economic Development. This is a joint effort between DCD and Economic Development. So when the pandemic hit, we adopted some emergency rules related to tents and temporary signage. As you know, the governor's order restricts occupancy as well as requiring certain distance requirements for businesses, and specifically restaurants. And so what we wanted to do was to help expand out the seating capacity for our restaurants in order to comply with those COVID requirements. So we adopted an initial round, and then in December we extended, as well as clarifying and providing some more flexibility for larger tents. All we're doing tonight is there's no substantive change to the rules. We're extending out through January 15th of 2022. The reason why is we're not seeing, we may roll back into phase two. We don't know what the summer holds. And so we just want to be able to give the restaurants and the businesses that have been using this the flexibility to do outdoor dining if they so choose.
Okay, we'll start with Verna. Questions, comments?
No questions. I think this is great, and I am in favor of the recommendation. Thank you.
Tom.
Thank you. Brandon, a couple clarifying questions. How did you pick January 15 as opposed to the 1st, the 30th? Is there any significance to that date?
Yeah, initially I was going to do December 31st, and Derek had a very good point. There could be restaurants and bars that might want to do something for New Year's Eve or New Year's Day, so why don't we extend it out to January 15th? So I think January 15th makes time. If people want to do stuff for New Year's, they have the flexibility, and it gives them time to remove the tent.
Okay. And on page, on the outdoor seating response, it gives some definitions and some policy. Are we enforcing any of these? Like if somebody puts up a lot of signs, more than they should, are we enforcing that, or we're just kind of letting the businesses do what they can to survive?
I would say that we're not doing, code enforcement of temporary signs has typically been a lower, not something that's a high priority. And in COVID, we're not really doing a lot of enforcement on temporary signs on private property.
Okay. I just wanted to ask. I'm in favor of this, and I'm all for doing what we can to help the businesses. So thank you.
Yeah, I'm going to make a comment about code enforcement, that the code enforcement staff has been reduced, if I recall. Remember that discussion? So they probably have less ability to enforce things at this time. So that would be one thing. The next question that I have for my fellow council members is, this recommendation is to forward it to the committee of the whole and then to consent at the next regular meeting. Do you think we could just put it on consent and I'll report out about it briefly tonight? Okay. And so the point that I'll make is that this that it's being extended, so it gives the restaurants flexibility to continue keeping their dining area expanded during this time of uncertainty with going back and forth between phases. Does that sound good in a nutshell,
yeah.
Brent?
Okay. Yes, that sounds great. And thank you for, we'll just go straight to consent, and I'll let the clerk's office know that we'll move it to just consent.
Sounds great. All right. So then the next item on the agenda, thank you, Brandon, is the SBDC. And is Rich here?
Rich is not here yet, so if I would suggest, why don't you go to the next agenda item, and I will track Rich down to join.
Okay, sounds great. So this is Derek, the Economic Development Budget Plan, or Plan Budget, on page 37 of our agenda.
Okay, can you hear me okay? Okay, great. Yeah, so as you said, as Councilmember Hogarty said, this item's on page 37. Basically, the purpose of this item, we are not seeking an actual decision from the committee tonight. We're really just opening this up for committee discussion. We would like your feedback. And what this item is, as you all are familiar with the whole saga of the Economic Development Plan, and as you're also aware, because the city is going to be receiving some money from the federal government under the ARPA, American Recovery Plan, the finance department is coming through the council process with proposed revisions to the city's budget to look at that money coming from the federal government. And so one of the options is to include some money for an economic development plan. We currently don't have any money in the budget anywhere to create an economic development plan. And so so the goal of this memo is to give you an opportunity to see what we're thinking, if you want to put some money behind doing a plan, and to hear your thoughts and feedback on it. You'll see a lot of the content in this memo in Vicki's staff report that's coming to the council. I think it's coming this coming Monday on the budget, potential budget changes, and so you'll see some of this in there also. And at that time, it'd be like a full council discussion. So it's really just opening up for discussion. You'll see in the memo, there's three components to what I'm proposing would make sense for in terms of an economic development plan. I've grouped them into these big three buckets, and we're happy to talk about any of those to any extent you'd like to.
Okay, I'll start with Tom. Thank you, Derek.
Okay. Rachel has her hand up. Does she want to, is there some information there that would be relevant before I comment?
Thank you, Tom. Rachel?
Yes. I just wanted to make sure you all were aware that in, and Councilmember Hogarty, you were in the committee meeting of finance and governance when we started talking about how to spend these funds, that the committee was very interested in the economic development plan being a part of that. So I just wanted to make sure you had that information as well as you're discussing that. Other council members have had this discussion and prioritized that. So thank you.
I'm going to ask a question related to that. So Vernon and Tom, what we did in finance is we looked at some of the suggested reinstatements, and you might have seen that memo if you looked at the finance memo from last Monday. And so there were things that were proposed, and that's where I brought up the code enforcement, because code enforcement has been reduced. And so that was what that, for example, that's one of the proposals, is to reinstate fully code enforcement. And so then it was brought up by Councilmember Redon that we could also have this funded as well. And so it wasn't in that memo, but it was brought up as something that as a priority, and we said, okay, yeah, we can, let's throw it in the hopper and cook it with everything else. So that's why you're getting this memo right now. And we can, and the three of us can have a little bit more info ahead of time on the advantages of starting this economic development plan now. And so, Tom, now I'm going to send it back to you with that a little bit, that background information.
Okay. I have two thoughts and or questions to start with. Number one, so the request to go out and do additional research, analysis, and things like that, don't you think we got enough information from Experience Tukwila and COVID-19 surveys to kind of
be able to land that plane, or we really need to go back out to the community and get more information about what they want or data points?
Well, I'd like to answer that question in a little bit of a, I'm going to start with a roundabout answer. I really hope the council knows we're willing to create an economic development plan with whatever resources you're comfortable with. So for instance, literally, you know, Brandon and I could sit down and we could write up a draft 10-page document for the council process to look at and council to make changes to and adopt at the very minimum. Or what you're seeing the proposal here is a more traditional, full-on, fully engaged process, which I would say this is, you know, it's a, so I just want you to know we're willing to work with whatever you're comfortable with as a council. To answer your question, more specifics, I don't think, we did try to do a survey for when COVID hit with the businesses, but honestly, it did not work out well. You know, we tried to do that survey in-house. We did not get what I would consider great quality responses from that survey. And also that survey was really focused on COVID and what the businesses were dealing with in terms of COVID. It really wasn't dealing with the question of what's your vision? What do you see in the next 10 years or 20 years? And we haven't done what I would consider really outreach to the residents about what the city wants to do in the next 10 years for as far as economic development goes. There was a lot of outreach to residents when the city did the comprehensive plan, and there's a whole economic element in the comp plan, so there was a lot of outreach for that.
Okay.
Did that answer your question at all?
Well, it's an answer. So I have a little bit more. I want to dig a little deeper on it. So I might be ignorant on some of these things, so maybe you can fill me in. I thought the experience Tukwila, we really reached out and kind of got a feel for what people thought about Tukwila and where it was going, and I thought that would give us some info along that line. But second, where does, I mean, it seems to me that we're trying to talk about developing something or creating something. But in my mind, I think, well, isn't that the job of economic development? Therefore, why would we be going out to do this? Isn't that something we would just do to create our own vision, to create our own guidepost, basically? Because I would think we would make a lot of decisions based on what our economic vision is for the city. And, you know, it just seems like we have trouble getting traction on this subject because we talked about it a year ago in committee, and then I know COVID hit. But I don't know that COVID removed us from the responsibility to have it. And so I just wonder if you could speak to that, please.
So I'm going to ask Brandon in just a minute on the experience Tukwila research. But on the part about COVID not relieving us of our responsibility to have it, it doesn't really relieve us of our responsibility to the benefits of having a plan. I would say that when COVID hit, I think it's important to acknowledge it definitely affected our available resources for working on things. So I think, you know, I think that's a big thing to keep in mind. Brandon, could you talk about experience Tukwila and what was the survey information? What type of information did we get relative to the city's overall economic development?
Yeah, so thanks. Again, Brandon Miles, Business Relations Manager. So we did do an extensive survey with Experience Tukwila. However, it was focused on tourism and how people viewed the city. So we have, you know, an economic development plan, tourism and branding is a component of it, but we did not ask a lot of wider range questions such as employment, such as, you know, what are our community members' kind of goals from an economic development standpoint. That was not included in the work for Experience Tukwila.
Okay.
Yeah, and so, okay.
Well, maybe just in last, it would seem to me that putting together that economic vision would be the role of the economic director. And so I guess I struggle to understand why we need to go out and get outside components to put that vision together. Maybe you could clarify that for me.
Yeah, that's actually, it's a really good question. So, so first of all, I appreciate you even asking that question because there's a sort of implied trust with me as the director, because if you thought I was completely incapable of doing it, you would never want to ask that question. So that's good. I don't think there's a right or wrong to it. Yes, of course, Brandon and I really do want to make our recommendations. We really would like the council administration to hear what we recommend the city's vision and city strategy should be. At the same time, we don't have all the answers on everything. So there are benefits to having some outside resources that have some expertise that we don't have that do plans for different cities. And so there may be some new information that might come that we don't know. The second thing is, a lot of times what these plans are about is building not just what the actual recommendation is, but it's about building the political and the community support behind those recommendations. And it's about figuring out the priorities of those recommendations. And so that's why there's a lot of outreach in a lot of times these plans are developed, because it's really about the prioritization and it's about the community and political support behind it.
Okay, I'll yield back at this time. Thank you.
Thanks, Tom. Verna.
Okay, so I'm glad you said what you said in the beginning was the fact that you guys have been working with, you're working with the finance committee on this, because that was going to be my first thing, like, what was the finance committee talking about this stuff? So good. So I hear what Tom is asking. And at first when I looked at this, I kind of had to say, well, why can't we do this in-house? But then I'm thinking, if we put together an economic development plan, wouldn't we want community buy-in, right? Wouldn't we want the buy-in of not only the businesses, but it would be helpful to have the buy-in of the residents, because then we would know, you know, because we could have one vision as a city or as a council, but what does everybody really want to see? And so to me, looking at that expanded outreach, that made sense to me when I read this again. The business contact database, that's you, that's, I understand that as well. So really, I'm just like talking. I'm not even asking any questions. That's my process. But, you know, I mean, this does make some sense to me. As far as $150,000, I don't know if that's the magical number. You know, I rely on staff and I rely on the finance committee. And hearing that the finance committee did want to prioritize economic development, I mean, it makes sense to me. And one of the things also that we've had a lot of talk, that I know Tom has spent a lot of time on, is working with TIS and to make sure that I'll use the word you used earlier, that there's some synergy there between how can we best utilize that with as far as economic development goes. So I really don't have any other questions that, you know, Tom didn't bring up and you didn't explain, other than, I mean, it does make sense to me. So I'll just leave it at that. Kathy, it's all yours.
Okay, thank you. So this is terrible. I don't remember which committee this was in last year. Tom, were either of you on that committee? Okay.
Yeah, it was planning and economic development.
It was in economic. Okay. So last year, the committee that this was in, at the beginning of 2020, it was actually the council members who asked for this. And so if you're wondering where this came from, it was the council members in that committee said to Derek, we think this is a priority, and we recognize that there's just a lot of economic development stuff that just comes up that Derek and Brandon have to address. They just, it's people coming in, you can't just say, I'm going to call you back in 2 weeks or something. So what happens is, to do something that's this large of a scope of work becomes it becomes difficult, especially if you want to do all the outreach. And so the council is really the one who said, well, But if we go out and look at going out and having some, like, a contract this out. So there's your answer to where that came from. And that's why you heard Derek say that they're very willing to do this. It's just that it's a time thing and also a resource thing. Well, resources are time. So the question is, if we throw it in the hopper, where does it come up as far as restoring services when we find out the income reinstatement that we have from the different sources that we have? I think it's really that simple. So here it is, economic development plan. We could reformat this and say we want to just have the staff do this. We could say we want staff to do parts of this. We might just put it all out. We can just start all over again with this too. I don't know, Derek, if that's giving you heartburn if I say that, but you know, so we could do that. So because it never got started, we really are just at the baseline level of it, and we can reconsider it when it comes to the budget and decide what we want to do next.
If I can jump in, I just want to say we do support wherever the council wants to go. We're not trying to add a lot of bells and whistles if the council doesn't want them. We recognize the council's got a lot of hard budget decisions to make, so that's why we put it out here, but we can pare this back depending on what the whole council wants to do.
Yeah, so that's kind of the feeling that I got, that economic development is really flexible and wants to work with us. So we could just take it from here.
I have another thought.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I have a client of mine who owns a business who was shut down during the pandemic, and they really had to shift and innovate. How do they reinvent themselves to survive the pandemic? And so they turned to kind of a social media advertising, promotion, kind of rebranding themselves. They didn't have $150,000 to invest. I mean, how come we don't look to hire somebody to be that full-time person to kind of help brand and articulate that vision under Derek's supervision to, you know, put that together? And that would give us someone that could work 2,000 hours on it, you know, and use social media as a way. I mean, this person did that with very little money, but they had no choice to survive. And I think sometimes we default to a position, well, we better hire a consultant, we better do a study of the residents and the business community. I think we know more than we probably give ourselves credit for what the residents and businesses would want. And if push came to shove and we didn't have any money and we're forced to survive, we would probably then default to some of these other methods. And should we think about those now? And if we're going to spend $150,000, why not use it for then bringing somebody on board full time? It could give us 2,000 hours on the subject. That's a thought.
It is an ongoing expense, Tom. If we do that, then we have hired somebody. If we want to hire somebody for a temporary, then it is basically contract work. Once you hire that person, it could be $150,000 for that person after you pay for everything, and then that's an ongoing expense instead of a one-time expense.
Okay.
Yes, Verna.
The other thing too is you know, Tom, I get what you're saying, but I think, you know, we really don't know exactly what it's going to cost to get what we need, right? Because we don't really know what we need. So if you just looked at, okay, basic plan, right? Basic plan, you know, hiring consultant, research analysis, that may bubble up and say, hey, there is a lot of potential here. And then we can look at bringing on another person, you know, a full-time FTE, a part-time, whatever. But, you know, that is an ongoing expense that we'll have to fit into the budget year after year, where there is, I'm seeing this as a one-time ask. Is that correct? This is like a one-time thing?
The creation of the economic development plan that's in this memo is basically, there's three items here. The first, well, the whole $150,000 is a one-time ask. So, yes, it's a one-time ask. I do want to highlight, though, the number three item, the improved business contacts database. Basically, I think it's important to know that you can update a database once, but then it's constantly going to need to be updated every year. And so, you know, obviously we want to figure out what would be the most streamlined way to update it every year. It's sort of like, so there will be some ongoing cost of some amount. We don't know what that would be. It's not like a large number probably. It's probably something that staff would be doing internally every year. We'd get the state business license database. We update stuff. So there's a little bit of ongoing tail work there. And if we didn't want to do that, then I would recommend not doing number three if we're not going to do some of that ongoing maintaining that database.
Yeah, that's a really good point, because once you do have it, then you have to upkeep it, because we all know what happens when you do that and then you don't, and then you just have this document you spent all this time on. So, but
right.
Maybe, and you know, and then maybe through, you know, your outreach and working your basic plan, again, there might be an easier way to do that. You know, there might be something might rise, bubble up and go, oh, well, this is like, Tom, what you were saying, people are really rethinking the way they do business these days. I mean, in my field, I mean, it's very different. And, you know, people that have been in it a long time are kind of struggling going, oh, is this how we're going to do it? But I think the pandemic has changed. There's going to be permanent changes that we see. And I think there's also innovation that has come out of that. So, you know, I'm open to seeing what ends up getting recommended through staff, how much we spend. So I guess that's my 2 cents worth again.
I'll conclude with this thought. I think this is a pre-pandemic thought process, and I'd like to see us be post-pandemic with our thought process and not just throw money at a consultant or a research, as you describe here. I think there's different ways we can get some data and use the money better than how we've described it. It's 150. So that's just my thought or my 2 cents worth. Thanks.
So I'm going to ask my fellow committee members, if you look on page 38, it says that this request may be included if the council considers restoring other city services. We did have one committee, particularly one committee member in that committee that was particularly interested in having this on the list of restored services. Are we okay with that, or that discussion happening there?
Yeah, bring it to full council.
Okay.
You know? Yeah, why not? Because who knows what they would think, you know what I mean? There might be some other creative thoughts there too. So, yeah. No, I think this was good. Good discussion.
Okay. So staff, does that give you enough information?
It does. And we, you know, we appreciate the discussion. And I think the one thing I would really hope is it'd be great. It is like we are restarting this process. We've had a lot of fits and starts with this. And, you know, we have tried in the past to start it with just an intern and, you know, $8,000 a year. And then it takes a long time to get through there. And so then, of course, things happen and that ends. So that's partly why, if you want to move forward in a big way, that's why the consultant is being recommended if you want to do a big way. But we are happy, again, we're happy to dial back the outreach. You know, we're watching what outreach goes on with other projects. So we're trying to read where the council might be on it. And, you know, I'm glad that Councilmember Hogarty brought it up is, you know, last year, what I did bring forward didn't have as much outreach. And as Councilmember Hogarty pointed out back then, that the committee did ask for more outreach. And so I think that's partly what's in our minds on it. But we're happy to adjust and where the council wants to go. And my understanding is some piece of this will be discussed as part of the staff report that Vicki brings forward to the full council. So that's my understanding of where that would be talked about. And that's all I've got.
Thank you, Derek. Okay. So let's move on then, because Rich is online. Rich Shockley, and we've heard from you over the years. It's good to have you here.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And you have a presentation about Start Zone here that you're welcome to do right now. We'll start with that.
Okay. I'll go ahead and share my screen. Is that coming through for everyone? Okay.
Yes.
Well, again, thank you for inviting me to share with you tonight. My name is Rich Shockley. I oversee two programs at Highline College. their economic development programs. One's the Small Business Development Center and the other one is Start Zone. Tonight, what I was asked to really share was just kind of a refresh on what these programs are, what we do, a little bit about what we've encountered with COVID and what the businesses are encountering. I'm going to touch on our funding model and then kind of where we are going as we move forward. I can get my presentation to move here. There we go. So I want to start with our Start Zone program. These are some of the businesses that we would work with. And our Start Zone program works with the underserved community. Most of them have limited English proficiency. Most of them are minority and immigrants. Almost all of them are low and moderate income. And the way we deliver this service is we begin with group training, then move to a one-on-one business advising geared toward a pre and an early startup. And the other program, the Small Business Development Center, we work with more established businesses. These are some businesses that we've worked with in the past few years. A couple of them on here, we've nominated them for, and they've been recognized by the SBA with some of their state awards. Kukuruza Popcorn was one that was the Young Entrepreneur of the Year. Grant Jones is no longer affiliated with that company, but this was an international franchise that we helped them launch. They were already established domestically. Dan the Sausage Man is a business that we nominated for the Small Business of the Year, and they were awarded that for Washington State a couple years ago. The way we work with these programs, most of these businesses are established already. If they are startup working with the SBDC, they usually come with industry experience or some knowledge base to help ensure some level of success. Our service is confidential, and it's one-on-one business advising. And we also have a research group that comes to us as part of our federal funding that's open to the businesses we serve as well. The kind of work that we do is it's really driven by the business. We're different than a consultant. We're not going to come in and say, here's your solution and we're going to do the work for you. We're going to come alongside and work with them. So it's really anything that the business would need to help them be successful and move forward. But these are the primary areas we work: financial planning and cash flow for the business, how to access capital that often takes the place of business plan, financial forecasting and packaging a loan with them. Lots of marketing right now, business strategy and planning, and I mentioned the research already. And our approach is really, this diagram really illustrates what we try to do, is to go in and meet with the business, understand their situation, where they want to go, what their personal and business values and goals are, and then build a strategy with objectives, help them develop a plan, and then help them implement that plan. And the engagement with us ongoing is really up to the business. We're not going to pursue them. We can be an accountability partner, but we're not going to call them and say, hey, did you get the next task done on your list? But that's our model. I'd like to introduce our team to you, and you've probably met a number of these individuals, but Jambi Gashoru is one of our microenterprise specialists. She works with our Start Zone program. She delivers that service in English and Swahili, and she works with the African community, but has a number of specialties. She has a passion for food, having had her own restaurant in the past. She actually is very active with the Food Innovation Network. Jambi also works with adult family care and child care, and also with the immigrant farmers. But she'll also work with any business. Those areas I highlighted are kind of her specialty areas. Jacqueline Garcia is our microenterprise specialist to our Latino community. Again, English and Spanish is how she delivers her services. Jackie has developed a plan and a model for us. She took one of our existing programs called Reality Check. She converted that into Spanish a couple of years ago. And it's a 4-day, 3 hours per day series on helping them come up with a concept and then developing their plan, business plan. And then she moves to one-on-one consulting after that, or advising. during COVID, Jackie had to convert this to online and had some real challenges with technology with her community. And so she's done a great job in continuing that program going forward. Fon Sivongsai is a certified business advisor with the SBDC. English and Thai are her languages. And she was, Fon and I worked together for about 12 years. She came on with Highline originally as with the Start Zone program, later took over some of the lead of that program. And then I brought her into the SBDC a few years ago so that I could get her some higher level certification and training to better deliver that service to the community. Fon still does a lot of her focus work in supporting the Start Zone program and has been able to bring that additional advising capabilities. And then myself, unfortunately, I only have one language. I rely on my team for the other parts. And we do co-advising through translation, oftentimes with Jackie. But I work with the more established businesses and then also with businesses either in international trade or looking to begin to move towards international trade. And I want to touch on how we're funded. It truly is a partnership between local funding and federal dollars. You know, a number of years ago, Tukwila, as part of Soundside Alliance, that group joined together and said, let's bring a small business development center to Highline. And so each city provides funding each year, and then those dollars we're able to use those as match dollars for federal funding, in essence, to double the resources in our community to provide the business advising. And I want to thank you for the support over the years and the continued support for our SBDC program. I want to move over kind of into what we've seen with COVID, how we've responded, what some of the businesses are encountering. And we've worked at our center with about 59 unique clients since COVID began, so the early part of March last year. As I look at how to break those down, about 35 are what we call direct one-to-one assistance. About 24 have been online training and webinars. These are businesses who chose to continue and move forward with us. There's been a host of others that we've worked with. We've worked with many businesses who are either have questions about grants and loans, how to apply for those, and then they've also leveraged some of our statewide training. And we don't have all of those documented. They have the option to elect to work with us as ongoing basis, in which case they would have filled out a application form to be accepted into our program. So what I've listed is those who've actually set up and become established with our program. The areas that we've worked, and again, this won't surprise most of us here tonight, but the hard hit areas have been the restaurants, the bars, hospitality, travel, and childcare. They've been hit the hardest, as we know. Other businesses who've actually profited or done well through these closures or these changes, it's been the construction and trades. We can just obviously see that in our local marketplace. Technology has done well. And those businesses who already had online sales or restaurants that could pivot or already had pickup and delivery services, many of those have done well and either even expanded or grown their revenues at this time. And then a third area of businesses that I wanted to touch on is those businesses that were already marginal before COVID, and COVID just magnified the challenges they were already having. Sometimes that was that they were undercapitalized. Sometimes they didn't have the expertise. Sometimes they didn't have a good business model. And unfortunately, many of those businesses won't make it through this time. The other thing that was highlighted to us was something that all of us recognize in our community here in South King County was the immigrant and refugee community. There was a gap in the stimulus going to those businesses. There was a lack of awareness of the money. There was a challenge with the language and cultural barriers, challenges with the process of application and documentation. And then also many were ineligible either because of their status as a U.S. citizen, or their business structure. Many of these businesses think it's the best thing to do is never to pay taxes. That means they never show themselves as earning payroll. And any of the Paycheck Protection Program really was a payroll loan. And so many of these businesses missed out on that and just didn't have the opportunity to take advantage of that program. the areas that we've worked with these businesses, of course, first it was where is the money and how do I find it? And once they receive some funding, it's how do I use it? How do I manage it? How do I control it? How do I get forgiveness of my loan? We also spend a lot of time with reopening and rebuilding and pivoting. And again, at Highline, we put an additional focus on the underserved community, as well as the state SBDC program has really recognized that need and has put a number of tools and programs in place to better serve that community. The areas that we've focused on are loans and loan forgiveness and cash flow management. And I'd like to go into a little bit of detail on those. With the grants and loans, there's the Paycheck Protection Program, Draw 1 and 2. And Draw 2 is going to be ending May 31st. Economic Injury Disaster Loan, known as EIDL. There was the EIDL Advance, which was a grant that's forgiven. Then there's a 30-year loan, or a loan that's amortized up to 30 years, and then a targeted EIDL as well. And that will go through the end of this year. It's been the Working Washington Grants 1, 2, 3, and 4. And then phase or grant 3, Commerce brought the SBDC in at a state level. And we were the primary lead on taking those calls. And during that time, we realized a number of challenges and problems with their grant program. And we're able to provide some suggestions to them. And fortunately, they made some of those changes in this fourth grant process. They made it available to bring an advisor in to complete that application and brought some language resources as well. We've also worked with the local city grants. We worked with Tukwila on one of the child care grants. Today, the restaurant revitalization fund was launched, and the shuttered venue and operators grant was launched a couple weeks ago. Related to the cash flow, I want to share this with you. We really learned this in 2008 and 2009. We realized that businesses who don't pay attention to their finances or their taxes really only work their CPA one time a year. We find that about 25 to 30% of them will actually be long-term businesses. By that, I mean 5 years or more. And those that work with their finances and use them as a tool on a monthly basis, we see that increase to about 75 to 80%. And those who work with their finances every week, they know them intimately, they see them as a tool, we see a high success level in those businesses. But looking towards the future, one thing I wanted to address is oftentimes in economic development, we focus on the retention and expansion and the attraction. But what we do at Highline with our Start Zone and SBDC is we really focus on that third leg of the stool, which is developing entrepreneurs and systems. So what we're focusing on going forward, of course, is the reopening. Safety and sanitation are going to be with us. You know, L&I has put a number of requirements in place, and we've already integrated that into our training. We'll continue to focus on cash management and adapting to changing markets. So when we're working with a business in the turnaround, the survival, and the exit strategy, we're really upfront with them. We tell them it's not going to be easy. We let them know that there's really no guarantee of the outcome. We do let them know that funding alone isn't going to take them through this challenge we're facing, and that they're going to have to develop an individual plan for them and their business. And then for those who determine that they're not going to make it, we help them develop an exit strategy that is best for them, their business, and for the community. This past year, we've been able to receive some CARES Act dollars the SBDC at Highline has, and we've been able to use those to leverage a partnership and actually fund the African Chamber to help us engage our local businesses in South King County. We also expanded our relationship with Seattle Southside Chamber. We've worked very closely with Andrea and her team, but we were able to expand that. And then we were able to bring Jackie Garcia on full-time with our Start Zone program. These funds will go away at the end of September, but we're hoping to be able to continue to develop these relationships and partnerships going forward. And that's really what I had to share. That's a lot of information, but I know you're very busy. I wanted to open it up for any questions if we have time for that.
Thank you, Britt. Yeah, so I'm getting an echo. Is that me? Who's up there? If you have your mic on, maybe you could turn it off. Okay, thank you. So, questions. Verna, do you have any questions about this presentation or comments?
No, I mean, this was, I love this. I think this is great. I appreciate all the work that you're doing. So you talked a lot about, you know, the COVID response and how you're working with people, but could somebody contact you, let's say that, you know, they're, and I pulled Jackie's page out because, you know, if they've got this great idea, they think it's a great idea and they want to figure out how to do this business, but they have nowhere to start. Would contacting you guys be something that would help them? Is that?
Yes, it would. We do, when you get into times like we're facing today, you see a lot of startup because people are out of work and they say, I've got this idea. So Jackie delivers our reality check in Spanish. We also deliver that in English. And then we've also rolled out at a state level a startup group training. So we also can leverage that class because our funding, technically we can work any place in the state. And so any advisor who's delivering a class, we can introduce businesses to those classes as well. So we really have three outlets for that. And then as well, each of us tend to take some of these businesses on a one-on-one basis to help them vet the idea, help them think through that process and move forward.
No, that's really good to hear. Perfect. You know, you're right. Because what I was kind of saying earlier in the last discussion is people are getting very creative, really, really creative. And how am I going to support my family? What am I going to do? And, you know, this individual that I'm talking about, you know, said to me like, well, you know, they live in Tukwila, and they were wondering, and I'm like, well, you know what? I don't know. Sounds like a great idea to me, but that's not my bailiwick. So I will point them in your
Yes, please send them our direction.
I will. Thank you. This was really informative. I mean, I know you guys are out there, but I think it's great to just have a touch in every now and then so we can really, really understand. And I think it's great, all the things that you're doing to help during COVID, because I mean, I know people who are like, you know, lawyers who are trying to figure out the whole PPP loan thing. It is not easy. And I can't imagine if English is not your first language and then all the rest, you know, that it would be very, very difficult. So thank you.
You're welcome.
That's it.
Thanks, Verna. Tom.
I know accountants trying to figure out the PPP, and it's confusing.
Yeah.
I say it from the CPA office. So first of all, thank you for the presentation. I think this is really good stuff, and you guys are doing good work. What can the city of Tukwila do to promote this or support this more than maybe where we're at currently?
So the city of Tukwila has been a great partner, and Brandon and Derek and I talk quite often, and they do send businesses our direction for some assistance. So even though you may not see it, there's a lot of referrals that are going on. But what the city can continue to do is to promote us like you have, anything on a website, anytime you have some business information that goes out showing us as a resource. And that has happened and continues to happen. So I think it's, you can promote this program and make it available to businesses, but what we find is businesses don't step out and take advantage of this resource that you've put in place until they have a problem or an opportunity. That's usually when we see them take some action. So what the city has been doing, I think, is great. You know, more of the relationship and the visibility and referrals are always great. But again, Brandon and Derek do quite a bit that goes unseen just because of the communication we have ongoing all the time.
And Councilmember, just to add to Rich's comment, one of the things that when Derek and I are meeting a business like at a when they just opened or something, we always ask, have you talked to the Highline, the SPDC yet at Highline College? Do you know about it yet? And some people will say yes, other people are like no, and then we make a referral. And just to let them know this is a resource, and I think something Rich said, most of these are free services. And so we want small businesses to take advantage of it when they can. So, you know, and we get, you know, and Rich is a great resource for me and Derek in the sense that some of the services that they provide are people that when someone does call us or emails us, we can immediately refer it to the SBDC for them to work with the business.
Okay, well, I think it's a great program. I think, Rich, you're doing great work. And if there's anything more than what we're currently doing, if we can do it in Tukwila, please let us know.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tom. Rich, can you explain the relationship between Soundside for Economic Development and Highline College's SBDC and StartZone?
Sure. So the SBDC at a federal level has been around about 40 years. And about 17 or 18 years ago, Soundside Alliance, which came together as a group of cities trying to address port issues, business issues, came together and said we would like to bring in a small business development center to Highline College. And so together, each of them as a group of cities and as partners contributed equal amounts to bring this center to Highline College. So what Soundside Alliance recognizes is that we're all tied closely together. Many times businesses don't know which side of the street the city is really on. They just know that they're in business. And when they get their license, they may know it's SeaTac or Tukwila or Renton or wherever they're Seattle. So we kind of have that ability to cross all those boundaries and deliver services to the business in whichever city they're in, really within our Soundside Alliance area. Kathy, is that what you're thinking, or you want to look for some more detail, or?
No, that's enough. I just because things change all the time, I like to keep in front of that because I'll report out on Soundside and say Soundside this and that, and sometimes it's really amorphic or it's really hard to figure out what Soundside actually does. But I'd say it's like their biggest success so far has been bringing that in. It was back when it was Skeedy, and they brought that in and continue to work with the SBDC. So and keep that awareness that they exist along with StartZone.
Yeah, you know, StartZone came on later. StartZone has been around about 10 years, and Jack Birmingham, the previous president of Highline College, just recognized the need, and we were at capacity at the Small Business Development Center, and so they did a study, and they recognized the need of these immigrant businesses, and so they developed StartZone, which really focused on the immigrant and disadvantaged businesses because it was, again, a big piece of our South King County community, and they were going unserved. And so the funding that we get federally for the SBDC doesn't apply to StartZone. However, by me bringing Fawn in as a certified business advisor, I've been able to pull down some federal funding to compensate for part of her salary and wages. And I just sent Jackie and Jambi through an associate business advisor position or certification. And again, I'm hoping to leverage some additional federal dollars when I bring them into those certifications. I have to go find additional match dollars to pull those federal dollars down. But the Port of Seattle has stepped up the last couple years and provided some three-year funding that helps quite a bit in sustaining that program for us as well. So when we brought those together at Highline, they used to run as separate programs, but they're so closely tied. And we needed one another's expertise, and so that's when we brought them together a few years ago.
Great. And I see Derek has his hand up. Derek, unmute. You're still muted for some reason.
Okay.
Got it.
I would like to address Councilmember McLeod's question about what else cities can do, Tukwila or others. I think one area of opportunity, and Rich is being very kind to not try to raise this too much, is expanding the language capacities to reach other non-English speaking immigrant businesses. So I don't know that Tukwila could provide additional funding to accomplish that all by itself. It would have to be a bunch of partners coming together. But I could see a real need. So as an example, when we had the child care grants, we contracted with Rich's group to help businesses that spoke Spanish and some other languages that he talked about today. But when it came to Somali or Amharic, we needed to contract with a different organization to provide that type of assistance. And so to the extent that Rich's organization is able to grow and add in additional languages, I think that would provide additional support for some of those small businesses. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Rich. And so this was an information only.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think we need to do this probably every year. The groups move around so that people can have this information. And also it updates, because I guess I didn't really know that you'd mix, that you'd sort of combined SBDC and Start Zone. And I'm, you know, right there in Soundside, and I didn't realize that that had happened. So there's information. This is really good to go through.
Well, they're still separate programs. Start Zone is an initiative of Highline College. SBDC, we're really a subcontractor to Highline. But internally, we saw the need that we needed to collaborate more closely. So you see that we still carry two brands, but our team meets together, works together, and sometimes we're paid out of different buckets, and sometimes we're paid out of the same. So internally, we've brought them together because we can deliver a better, more cohesive service to the businesses when we do it that way.
Thank you. And thank you for being here.
Happy to join you, and thank you for the invitation.
Yes, okay. You're welcome. All right, we're going to move on to the next item then. So it's 6:26, and Nora, do you think we can do this in about 15, 20 minutes? That's the joy of being the last item on the agenda. So
I will start it off.
Yes, I'll hand it over.
Follow your questions.
Yes.
Okay. All right, well, thanks everybody. It's my first visit to this new reformulated committee. Nora Gerloff, Director of Community Development. I've been in the job for a month now. It's been a bit of a whirlwind, lots of information coming. So over the past month, I've met with everyone in the department, either one-on-one or in small groups, to really talk about, you know, help me understand what their jobs are, how they see those, and hear their concerns and suggestions. So really trying to understand where they're coming from, where are their frustrations, making sure that I don't just come in and propose solutions without understanding what the people on the ground really feel like are their problems. So that's been a real learning experience for me. I'll continue to do it. I'm really trying to find ways to connect with people in a remote environment when they can't just, you know, run into you when you're at the microwave kind of thing, you know, trying to find ways to have those casual conversations where people might open up more than they would be in a large meeting. So anyway, that's kind of been my process. Some of the stuff we've talked about in terms of the permit status was touched on last week with Vicky's memo to the finance committee. They're talking about restoring service reductions. But here's a deeper dive into some of that information that I know Councilmember Hogarty was interested in seeing at that last meeting. So tried to kind of pull some numbers to really try and understand the story of what's going on. So that first graph that's there, I think there's a couple interesting takeaways from that one. And one is that we've had a surprisingly consistent number of permit applications over the years. You know, there was a dip in 2020, but it didn't fall off a cliff. You know, it was surprisingly robust given, you know, the huge uncertainty that and the finance issues that people were going through. And, you know, when we look a little farther down, we see that 2021 looks like it's also pretty much on track. It might be a little bit lower than historical averages, although things could pick up, but not hugely different. Where we do see some real variation is in the valuations of those permits. So you see 2019 was really a huge year for valuations, and that means we didn't get a lot of extra permits, but we got some really big permits that come in. And so those big permits also take sort of a disproportionate amount of time and resources to process. And so there's a little bit of a kind of pig in the python effect where something comes in 2019, we probably are still reviewing it in 2020, and then 2020 and 2021, we have a lot of inspections and, you know, on the job construction kinds of questions. So there's some, you know, ongoing larger impacts of that as it kind of moves through the system there. And then if we kind of move on to the next chart there, I thought this was something that kind of surprised me. And that was the fact that the first couple months of 2021, we really were processing permits at about the same rate as we have had historically pre-pandemic. That people, they really are working hard. They are getting things out the door, even though we're shorter staffed in our divisions. The issue has been we built up a big backlog during 2019 for all those reasons that, you know, I think we've laid out. And we're able to kind of almost kind of reach where we were, but we're not able to tear down that backlog with the current staffing that we have. And I think the reasons, you know, why I think we've been able to do as well as we have is, at least on the planning side, we've really pulled all of our resources that we can into permitting. There were a couple things that we're time sensitive and we still needed to work on the urban growth capacity study with part of GMA. We're, you know, obligated to get those numbers to the state. Tukwila South, the design guidelines and regulations, that was a priority that we needed to keep working on. And then the housing action plan has a grant deadline that we need to fulfill. So we're continuing to move on that. But in terms of any of our other budget goals, you know, ADU updates, TIB, MFTE, we're just not able to start those until we are able to make some difference on this permit backlog. You know, I think, and then, you know, there were frozen positions and there's vacant positions. So you guys are having an ongoing discussion about whether to restart some of those frozen positions. The vacant positions, like in the building department, we've been working on trying to fill some of those for a long time. It's really a matter of the market out there. Lee is looking at, he got this last round that we went out to for building inspections. We got 7, at least on paper, seem qualified. He's reviewing them to see which of those we want to interview and roll through interviews starting next week. So we're hoping that, you know, we get a live one out of that and are able to help our inspectors out. You know, some of the other things, again, we've had a lot of people leave at the same time, and also people have medical situations at the same time. So, you know, Lee's trying to do 3 jobs. Nancy's trying to do 2. I'm trying to do at least 2 right now. So, I mean, I think it's not a question of people underperforming so much as it is just finite numbers. Here's the staff we have. Here's the things we have to do. And we're trying to prioritize and work through that. And I will continue to work with those teams on, you know, prioritizing and setting aside some time to try and knock out some of the smaller things so they don't necessarily get mixed in with the bigger projects, and we can get some people on their way while we're working on the larger ones. But there's only so much optimization we can do that's really going to make a difference without the staffing to handle this. So I'm happy to dig farther in or answer more detailed questions, whatever, you know, will help you get the information you need.
Thank you. All right, Tom, we'll start with you this time.
Okay, thank you. Nora, I've heard from contractors, I've heard from developers, and they've expressed their frustrations working with the permit process in Tukwila. You and I have had conversations about that and some of the barriers that you've seen over the years. So I guess how many of those barriers could we remove with a change in policy, or do you see this more as just a matter of procedures and personnel?
I think the switch to online permitting is a sea change that a lot of other cities are dealing with as well. Some of the ongoing issues are probably communication and making sure that the different divisions and departments that are reviewing the permits are tied together. And I think that was really one of the goals of the one-stop permitting, one, to make it more convenient for the external people, but also to foster greater communication and teamwork within the city. So that's a couple months old. We're playing it out. I do have some recommendations in here to kind of handle in terms of incorporating the development review engineers into our team and make sure that they feel welcomed and we understand their needs and support them. So there's that. I think we've always, suffered from a bit of a lack of communication with public work. So let's play out this change and see whether that helps. Fire department, I think having our permits come through the permit center, we're hoping that that also leads to better communication. And certainly Ben Heyman is very focused on that. And I think he's been a great partner, and we're, developing better ways to work together and communicate. But I think that area has seen improvement, and I think we have more improvement to go there. So, I think there have been a couple things that have happened that I'm hoping will start to address that, given we're, again, a couple months into these new approaches. One of the, I think, unexpected outcomes of the switch to online permitting, which I've talked to some other cities and they're seeing it too, it's not unique to Tukwila, is that people are now empowered to just start clicking and applying for things, and they don't necessarily understand either what they need to apply for, or they're not giving us the complete and quality applications that we've seen in the past. And that takes a lot of staff time to circle back with people to say, I think you attached the wrong thing. This geotech is for the house down the street, and maybe they knew that, or maybe they didn't know that, but it takes some follow through. Whereas before, people would, obviously inefficient, but they come to the counter with their big stack of drawings, and the permatech would sit there with them, and we'd go through the checklist, and they'd say, yes, yes, oh, you're missing something. And we'd have that kind of face time with them. I think I'd like to offer some version of that to especially our larger applicants or people who feel like they want an intake appointment where we can give them that advice. I think that would be helpful. Some people know the system, they know what they need to do, they can self-serve. We're finding that not everyone is capable of self-serving, or that's the best choice for them. So trying to find some ways to go back to some of that hands-on service, I think it saves them time and it saves us time. So when we have the capability of doing that, that's something I'd like to offer.
Okay. Thank you. But what I'm not hearing is that you need a different policy. I'm not hearing that. Or an additional policy.
There's always regulatory streamlining, but I'm not sure anyone has the brain space to deal with that at the moment.
Yeah. Okay, I'll yield back at this point.
All right. Thanks, Tom. Verna?
Sorry if you could hear my dog howling in the back. that was really, Tom, thank you for asking those questions. I kind of focused in on the proposed solutions to improve customer service, and I like these. And it does make sense to me. Again, I'm not in finance, and I haven't like completely dialed into the memo everybody keeps referring to, because I know it's going to come to full council with a recommendation. But in order for us to keep going, we've got to do something, right? I mean, you can't, if things are slow or things aren't, you know, the average data issue, that's what one of the things that I really noticed on those charts was, you know, we've gone from, you know, 29 days to 40 days. I mean, that's a significant amount of time, but you can't do it unless you have people to do it, right? To process. So, you know, and the other thing I liked about this was when the solutions, they start with this, then it can move to this, then it can move to this. But like what you were just saying is you're looking at ways to make it easier, because you're right. Not everybody's going to fit into the same slot, right? Like you said, some people need some more handholding. Some people need it differently, but you can't even get to address that until you can tackle the backlog. And then the other thing, was like, you know, you hear from the council all the time, when are we going to start doing the stuff on TIB? Well, you can't even get to that because this stuff is more pressing. I mean, you've got developers who are building, who needed to move. They, you know, they've got their lender. They've got to meet, you know, their deadlines with their lenders and whoever. So to me, I think this is really, really good information to have as to why we would support, you know, at least starting out with, you know, unfreezing the vacant planner position and then helping put these other things in place. So I really don't have any questions, but this was really, really good information to have. So I'm glad you're here, Nora.
I'm glad to be here.
I'll turn it back over to Kathy.
Yeah, thanks, Verna. I was wondering, because I was looking at the proposed solutions on the last page too, and this may be an obvious question or maybe not. So as far as you've got a lot of things that will help improvements, but is there one thing that will really help free up the log jam? One or two things that if you did those two things, that would just really make a big difference. Obviously, all of them are going to make a difference. But if you looked at that list on page 42, or maybe you just know, what would be the one or two biggest things that could happen?
I mean, I'm trying to do all of those things. The thing that's really in the council's court is unfreezing the associate planner. The other things, I think we're all trying to work forward, and some of it's going to be, can we attract qualified applicants and get them on board, which is not necessarily a given in this market. I am just surprised at how busy the hiring market is. It's people are switching jobs, and there's a lot of jobs out there, and so that's the wild card. Is even if we go out, who are we going to find?
So there was one bullet, the second to the last bullet said rehire the extra labor planning intern position. Do you need funding for that one too? Because it said if or when the frozen planner position is refilled. So then will you need funding, or do you have that funding frozen, or what's with that position?
So under the union, we can't outsource work if we have a frozen position. So we can outsource some of the building permit review because those are vacant positions, not frozen, but the planner's frozen. If we were able to go out and recruit for that, that does open under the union the possibility of rehiring our student intern. And we have enough money probably to hire someone for the rest of the year. So I guess is the budget reduction we took in that line item, is that also reduced for next year, or was it a one-time for this year? I'm not sure how that worked. If it were for next year too, then we probably wouldn't have enough money for a full year, but we have at least part of the year.
Okay. All right. So having people is a huge deal, and then all these other systems, things that you want to improve, mm-hmm. they'll all make a difference too. All right. So thank you very much.
No magic bullet.
Well, the unfreezing of the vacant position sounds like it would really help loosen things up.
Right.
And so this will be, again, one of the items on the discussion of service restoration. And are we, is Rachel on? Yes. Are we going to have this information for us when we go to have that discussion, this and also the economic development plan budget? Would those two be included in the package?
Yeah, so we have updated the finance memo to go ahead and reflect the $150,000 for the economic development plan, and then the discussion, the planner was in
the original,
in that initial presentation that we gave to the finance committee.
So, but this information that's in here, will this, if we put it in the memo, then we'd have to go through all that information, or this is something maybe we can talk about offline.
Sure.
Because it's 6:45. I'm is that okay with the council, with my fellow council members, if I just ask about logistics, you know, to call her and, you know, and then we figure it out and there you go. Okay. All right.
Thank
so,
you.
Yeah. Okay. So thank you very much. And, I will see everyone in 15 minutes. This is the meeting ending. Yeah.
Thank you.